Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. This is episode 95. And in today's episode, I'm going to be covering the second part of the creating a pipeline of deals process, which I spoke about last week. So this is the second step, which is called perception. Last week, I spoke about process. This week, I'm going to speak about perception and what that means. There are two further steps, which are paperwork and persistence, which I'll be covering over the next 2 weeks. Now, this creating a pipeline of deals is almost like a mini series, which is part of my five-step plan, my five-step process for creating a profitable HMO portfolio. And those five steps all begin with F, which are find it, fund it, finish it, fill it, and future-proof it. So we're just really on the find it stage at the moment. And the first step, of course, to finding it is creating that pipeline of deals. So that's where this fits in case you were wondering. Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Perception. What is it? And why does it matter? Well, according to Wikipedia, perception is the organization, identification, and interpretation of sensory information in order to represent and understand the presented information. Whew, there's lots of shuns in that sentence, aren't there? In other words, it's about how we utilize the sensory information that comes into our brain to make sense of the world or a situation. And when you are working in property, you'll find that you will be presented with huge amounts of data, huge amounts of sensory information that are both logical, mathematical, but also when you're dealing with people, sometimes the information that you're presented is maybe either facial expression, nonverbal communication, or other forms of communication which are not so much logical, but sensory. Some people are naturally perceptive. You might be one of those people that's very good at reading nonverbal communication and body language and can easily sense how somebody's feeling or thinking or responding to a situation or responding to what you're saying. Other people are much less able to interpret those signals and find that kind of interpersonal communication and interpretation really quite hard to understand. This is a skill that you can learn, though. You can learn to understand people better. You can learn to read people better. And my experience is, in property, it's very much a people game. So being able to understand how somebody is feeling or thinking and have the right tools to be able to delve a little bit deeper are really important in how you can then grow your property portfolio. Perception gives you insight into the possible motivations of a seller. So maybe you can delve further into the real reasons for a fast and efficient sale. Now, this is a vital skill because it means that you can cut to the chase and start negotiating on terms that are meaningful to you both, terms that matter to you both, and you don't have to keep skating around the edges for so long. Perceiving what will work is a core skill when you're negotiating with people. And if you rush too quickly into the details of an offer, you might actually miss some of the important details which matter to the vendor, and you've kind of just rushed over or brushed over and have seen as unimportant. But actually, to them, that's critical to get those agreed or understood before they're happy to move on to the next step. The other part of this element of perception is understanding about the various strategies that are available in order to secure a property. You see, however good you are at reading people or perceiving a situation, if you're not sure what a solution is at the end of it, you don't know what solutions are available, you may actually miss out on some of the possible fantastic win-win scenarios that you can create. Had I not been educated about many of the different creative scenarios in property buying, I would have overlooked many potential deals that cross my desk. It's by understanding what makes a deal work that you'll be ahead of the crowd, and you'll be able to work with vendors, agents, local people, contacts, people who just sort of phone you up, maybe from your own marketing or from your contacts or your network, and you'll have confidence and insight to be able to deal with those situations, knowing that you have some potential solutions up your sleeve. If you know how to adopt the right strategies in particular situations, couple that with understanding people, that will now allow you to negotiate and find some fantastic deals. Now, not only that, when you understand the different solutions that are able to be resolved, you know, in different situations, and you can solve people's problem pain points, it also gives you confidence to negotiate deals. It gives you the ability to pace that negotiation correctly, so you're neither rushing and pushing somebody into a situation where they're uncomfortable, but neither are you leaving it to hang too long before you're trying to close the deal. Ultimately, that timing is very important, because not only do you want to bring the vendor on side, you want to allow them to know, like, and trust you, because people work with those that they know, like, and trust, but you also want to help them to make a decision. What you're trying to do is to get that deal over the line. And if it drags on for a long time, it's going to be frustrating for you and also for the vendor. Many sellers are not necessarily looking for cash when they're selling their property. I know that may sound counterintuitive, but it's very true that people who are selling properties actually might be happy to do something other than, you know, trade their property for money. They might be looking for other problems to be solved, and simply selling the property might solve one particular property problem, but it might give them another problem. So although their property is up for sale and it apparently looks as if a purchase transaction is what's required, many vendors have reasons that they have to dispose of the property, even though actually selling is the least beneficial route for them. But they don't know what you know, and therefore their only option, as they see it, is to choose to go to an estate agent to sell the house. But they just didn't realise or know that there are other strategies possible. And this is where you have to work with them and educate them and explain to them what else you can do with that property. And it might not be just that a simple transaction of a normal conveyance as a sort of standard process is the only option open to them. In fact, many vendors are desperate to sell and need a fast transaction. If we think right now about the property market, we've seen prices go up and up and up over COVID, and now they're starting to come down and down. And vendors are starting to get a bit itchy. Despite the fact there are fewer properties up for sale because of mortgage interest rates, that's obviously having an impact on the market, both in terms of residential and investment purchasing. And so a lot of people who are putting their house on the market are beginning to think, "Ooh, I need a certain sale. I need a speedy sale, because at least then I can lock in the price." So speed and certainty are the two factors that many vendors in this particular market are going to want to achieve. So how can you work with that? Well, unless you understand the processes for executing a deal fast, for example, using a purchase lease option, you won't be able to meet the needs of a seller, and you'll probably lose out on a possible deal. So how do you negotiate with a seller? How do you use your sense of perception? How do you line up all of the data, the information that you need to be able to then lead that seller down to a possible conclusion where you benefit and they benefit as well? So here are a few tips just to help you to develop your sense of perception, and also some skills to be able to collect the data that will allow you to make that decision on what is the next step that's best for you and best for the vendor. Number one, put the vendor first. In other words, make sure you listen more than you talk and hear more than you speak. It's very easy, isn't it, to go into a room and start the negotiations all about you, telling them all about who you are, trying to make sure that they think that you're the best thing since sliced bread, you're the answer to their prayers, you're going to solve all their problems, and please would you give me your property and, you know, we'll all be happy and thank you very much. It's been a lovely time meeting you. Well, that might work for some people, but in my experience, most people are in the mindset of thinking, what's in it for me? And the vendor will be no different. They want to know what's in it for them. So the first step is to for you to make sure that you ask appropriate questions to put that person first. They want to feel like they're in the driving seat, not you. And in fact, by asking a series of open-ended questions, you are really putting them in the driving seat, or at least they will think they're in the driving seat. So you need to listen more than you talk, but you also need to have a bit of a structure for the conversation. So the first step is to create rapport. Now, rapport isn't just about small talk. It can take the form of small talk, but it's also about asking some meaningful questions. While you're asking those questions, observe how they're being answered. Are they nervous? Are they shy? Are they wary? Are they a dominant person, a decisive person, an impatient person? How do they answer your questions? Are they quick to reply? Are they thoughtful? Take a bit of time to find out about their motivation. Try and be aware of what it is that's driving them to make this sale or to consider having this conversation with you. Now, there's a maxim in psychology, in Gestalt psychology actually, which says pace, 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 lead. The idea behind it is that imagine you're going on a walk with somebody and their walking pace is different from yours. Maybe they're faster than you are or slower than you are, and you're getting maybe a little bit out of breath because they're walking too fast for you, or maybe you're getting a bit kind of frustrated because they're walking too slowly for you. How do you enable that person to walk at your pace? And this is true in a conversation as well. Well, what you do is you first of all match their pace. So you match the pace at which they're talking. So you might meet a vendor, for example, who, wanders around the topic, spends plenty of time talking to you about lots of different things that are really quite irrelevant, totally meaningless. And, you know, as far as you're concerned, you just wish you could get out of there, stop this conversation because it's going nowhere. Well, let me just ask you to put pause a little bit on your thinking there, because ideally what you want to try and do is really just let that person speak a little bit. You might also add in a couple of comments or a couple of little questions, but you are going at their pace. Now, once you have, coordinated your speech patterns, coordinated maybe your physical movements along with their pace, you're pacing along with their pace, you can then start to take the pace a little bit up. You can start to move it a bit faster and you can start to lead. Now, I'll tell you, I've done this on many a walk that I've gone on with friends and family where their walking pace is not the same as mine. I join in with them, I walk alongside them, whether they're faster or slower than I am, and then slowly I start to adjust the pace. And I do it at a very subtle level. They don't even know it's happening. But by the time we're a third of the way into the walk, we're walking at a pace that suits me, and they haven't even noticed. Because I use this very clever technique, this Gestalt technique, pace, 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 lead. And believe you me, it doesn't just work when you're going on a walk, it works in a conversation as well. And many a time I've had a conversation with somebody, maybe they talk faster than I am, and I have to suddenly talk very, very fast, and I have to sort of think of all my words very, very quickly, and I have to make sure that I'm actually keeping up with them because they're a very, very fast talker. Or somebody who talks much more slowly, and I have to pace with them. But they feel that I'm then on their wavelength and I understand them. And then slowly I can start to talk a little bit more like my natural pace until we get to the point where the conversation is flowing at a pace where I feel, yep, that's more comfortable for me and that's more my regular pace of conversation. In other words, let the other person set the pace initially while you set the structure. Then you can mold the interaction and lead the discussion. However, what is the content of the discussion? What does it need to, what does it need to be full of? What kind of content are you trying to elucidate from the person, from the vendor that you're in front of? I think it's really important that you use open-ended questions. So these are questions that don't require a yes or a no answer, because whenever somebody's in that mindset or being asked yes or no closed questions, it can make them feel rather cornered. It can make people feel under a bit of pressure. And the last thing you want to do with your vendor is put them under pressure, because you're simply trying to open up the conversation here so that you can then either go away and have a think of a solution or maybe even present some solutions there and then. Now, open-ended questions are questions that are what, how, which, when, where, who. I try and avoid why. You sometimes might need to ask a why question, but again, why can sometimes feel a little bit domineering when you're asking, you know, why do you want to sell, or why are you doing this? You can use why, but I would recommend you use that perhaps a little bit more towards the end of the conversation, when you've got a bit more kind of free flow chatter going between you and the vendor. So what are the reasons that you're selling? Who else is involved in the sale? Who else is affected by the sale of the property? How long has the property been on the market? How long have you been wanting to sell? Which are the options that you've already looked at in order to sell the property? What other problems are you trying to solve in disposing of the property? When are you looking at being an ideal time to be able to sell? When would you like to complete the transaction? How long have you owned the property? Who else is involved in making a decision about selling the property? So these are all open-ended questions, and what they allow you to do is to ask the relevant question of the vendor, to get some detail from them and get some data, but also they allow you to assess where that person is in terms of their thinking. And the way that they answer the question will allow you also to understand them a bit more. Remember, this is about creating rapport. And why is rapport important? Well, rapport is important because, of course, it's about trust. If that person can know, like, and trust you, they're much more likely to want to do business with you. And by asking open-ended questions, you are showing that you're actually interested in that person, and you're interested in being able to understand their motivation, their reasons, and maybe some, they might also bring out some hidden reasons. And if you're good at this, if you become good at asking open-ended questions and being able to ask some supplementary questions, you can get to the truth of what the reason is, why they're selling, and what they're looking to achieve from this sale. Now, as well as that, you're going to have to gather some facts, because part of this is about doing an assessment as to whether you can form a deal or not. Now, some people want to get to the point of the offer immediately, and others are assessing you to see if they even want a deal with you, which is why open-ended questions are so valuable, because what they do is they allow the vendor, the seller of the property, to feel as if they're in the driving seat, because you're actually interested in them. You're not pushing your views or your opinions onto them. You are listening to them. You're thinking about what they're saying, and you're taking on board all the different reasons that might, and people and other factors that, if you like, that they're having to line up behind any decision they take about making a deal. Now, whenever I've had these conversations with vendors, what I usually do is go away afterwards and think about it. I tend not to rush into making an offer there and then, or saying something that later on I might go and regret. Now, quite often you'll find that because vendors want speed and they want certainty, they may want to rush you into making a decision. So they may want to start to ask you, what do you think you can offer me? What do you think this house is valued at? When you say you can make a cash offer, what do you mean? I would try and resist answering some of those questions and explain, so that I can make you the best offer, I need to go away and crunch the numbers, and I'm sure you'd rather I got this right than messed you around. I'll be able to do that quite quickly, but before I do, I would like to just ascertain a few more facts. Would it be okay if we just talked about those facts? So what did you pay for the property when you bought it? What's the remaining mortgage term? What's the remaining amount on the mortgage? How much are there any other debts which you'd like to pay off? In fact, that's not an open-ended question, isn't it? So don't ask that one. What other debts would you like to pay off when you pay off your mortgage? That's a much better question. There, I'm falling into my own trap. So make sure that those open-ended questions are the questions that you're using to identify the facts of the sale and the facts from the vendor. And then rather than rushing into an answer there and then about what you can offer them, go away, have a think about it and crunch the numbers. When you've left that interaction, that meeting, that situation with the vendor, spend a bit of time reflecting on what you saw. What did you feel during the meeting? Did you feel that the person was trying to push you into commitment, into making an offer there and then? Did you sense urgency? Did you sense that they were desperate to sell? Did you sense that they had some reservations about working with you? What were the giveaway clues about the motivation of the vendor? Did they seem nervous? Did they seem perhaps a little bit concerned about revealing anything to you, which means that they maybe don't quite trust you yet? What conclusions would you draw about whether the deal is possible? Does this person want to do business with you? Do they need to get to know you a little bit more? Did you rush the discussion? How did you feel throughout that conversation that you had with them? Just go away and write some of these things down in a notebook, sit in your car or, you know, walk down the street and just have a little reflection. Because the more that you do this, the better you will get at being able to lead those discussions, at being able to pace, lead, at being able to answer open-ended questions and to be able to use perception when it comes to negotiations and negotiating an outcome that is a win for both of you. Now, at this point, it's impossible to predict the outcome of where this will lead. Stay calm and positive. Be positive as you end the conversation and then the next step is to press on to the paperwork. And I'll be talking about that next week, which is where we start to put the detail together of a deal and make an offer to the vendor about his or her property so that hopefully you can create a win-win situation. Have a listen again to this podcast, though, if this is something which you feel you need to improve on. It's a skill that is very much interpersonal. Some people are excellent at this. I've met some people and they're extremely good at negotiating a conversation or handling an interpersonal situation. They've got very good communication skills. They've got very good nonverbal communication skills and they can both read people well and respond well to them. I think I've learned how to do this in my adult life and perhaps when I was in my 20s, I wasn't quite so good at this, but I've learned it through study, through reflection, through feedback. It might be that one of the ways you can improve on this is by practicing. In fact, we can definitely all improve on anything by practicing. So get a couple of friends, go through the process of asking some open-ended questions. Ask them to tell you honestly, how did you come across? How did they feel while you were asking them the questions? And maybe you could do another situation. You could run it separately with somebody else where you perhaps normally would lead the conversation normally with your own pace, your own style, and your own way of asking questions. And then compare and contrast those two situations. Which one did you feel worked better? Where did the other person who was in the conversation also come out feeling that you had managed that better and that you had perhaps skillfully addressed some of the areas and you were a bit more in charge and a bit more perhaps trustworthy? So actually test yourself out on this. Get somebody who's prepared to be a willing volunteer, do a couple of role plays and start to learn and practice these techniques. Because when you get these off to a fine art, let me tell you, that negotiation that you have with a vendor becomes much, much easier. You start to feel much more relaxed. They feel more relaxed. They end up knowing you, liking you, and trusting you. And it's a much more positive outcome for both of you. So next week, I'm going to talk about paperwork and what to do next. Have a great week, and I'll speak to you soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.